Welcome to this week's edition of World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley speaking to you from Washington, D.C. A series of big events coming now just in the last day or two. We will be talking on the domestic front about the fact that, according to the International Monetary Fund, China has definitively passed the United States as the world's biggest economy, according to the so-called PPP price standard. China has now passed the U.S., and that is a strategic earthquake. And my answer to that is, don't let it stand. Give them a run for their money. It's called a peace race. Launch a peace race of production, science, engineering, progress, standards of living, and we'll see who will dominate the economy of the world. The only way you can do that here is kick out the ruling class, fire the ruling class, fire Wall Street, get rid of them. They're incompetent. They are fools. They have dilapidated a tremendous advantage that they inherited from the better days, right? Kick out every libertarian. Kick out every monetarist, every Austrian, and every Keynesian, too. They're all just as bad. Get rid of them. Get back to the American system. Now, concerning the American system, I had talked tentatively about scheduling a course in the political economy of the American system here in Washington, D.C. for approximately the middle of the current month of December 2014. We find out, however, that the wonderful monopolistic airline system has kept airline fares so high, and the interest in outlying areas was quite lively, it will be impossible to schedule this course for the month of December. So we're now looking at mid-January, and when I say mid-January, that could turn out to be the weekend right before the Martin Luther King holiday. That is one, at least one tentative, I stress tentative, idea is the 16th, 17th, and 18th of January, 2015. Please don't buy tickets quite yet. I don't want to give you a boost here. We're going to try to work on this and see if we can solve the logistics, which we're now having to tackle for a second time after quite a number of the best prospects to come here couldn't make it. So I'm sorry about any inconvenience. I would like to thank the quite numerous people who have sent in their request to be kept on the mailing list, and you will be. And that is by going to Tarpley.net, where, of course, you go every day. Anyway, Tarpley.net, you go into the Speakers Bureau, and you open up the contact feature there and send me an email. Easy to do. So we need to fire the U.S. ruling class. We need to push aside the Wall Street ruling class and replace that with something better. I hesitate to call it a new ruling class, but that would certainly be one way to look at it. In other words, a new elite of service, of merit and of service. Merit alone is not enough. It's got to then be dedicated towards service. There is no reason for this country to be relegated to the status of something like a washed up European power, right? And a Weltmachtruine. You don't want to become a Weltmachtruine. You don't want to become the wreckage of a former world power. That's not good. And it's also not good for these things to happen in such a precipitous way. So, peace race with China, peace race with all, no more aggression, kick out the Wall Street elite. Kick out the bankrupt, rotten, cretinous ruling class of the United States and replace that with something better. And we know what's better. We know the program that will do it. So that's certainly number one. Now, we'll get back to this. The overarching question, though, right now is this huge strategic emergency, which is now becoming clear. In the last 36 hours, we've had a fierce attack by Islamist militants in the capital of Chechnya. And about 20 are dead. These are Islamist suicide bombers. And this event was timed to coincide with the State of Russia, State of the Nation address, which Putin was holding then in the Kremlin. So this, you could see a big building in the center of town was seized. It was shot to pieces, burning, damaged buildings all over the place, and so forth. So it is a huge challenge. And as we'll see, it's the third in the course of the last year. I urge you to get out your copy of Obama, the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate, 2008, by yours truly. Go to tarpley.net and order it immediately. In here, we find the story of Ilyas Akhmadov, the ambassador of the Chechen terrorist organization, which had him as essentially an ambassador here in the United States, thanks to the tender care of Zbigniew Brzezinski and others. And, of course, we remember that in the Boston bombing, Uncle Ruslan was married to the daughter of Graham Fuller of the CIA, presumably one of the handlers of people coming from that neck of the woods. Just last year, we had Doku Umarov, Chechen terrorist leader, killed. And remember that his predecessor, as the boss of this entire thing, Basayev, was one of the most notorious CIA agents anywhere in the world. So I'm saying this because if you're reading this from the Russian point of view, when you see Islamist crazies attacking in Chechnya, you think right away, CIA, MI6. And indeed, sure enough, let's see what Putin had to say about this in that that speech that did go on, right? The show did go on. So let's just see a few things about this. He says he's talking about the policy of containment. Let me go back to this. Putin says, concerning sanctions, economic sanctions are not just a kind of ad hoc or knee-jerk reaction on behalf of the United States responding to the coup in Ukraine or the Crimean Spring, which was an answer to that. Putin says, I'm sure that if the Ukrainian events had never happened, if none of that had ever happened, the U.S. and the West would have come up with some other excuse to try to contain Russia's growing credibilities, affect our country in some way, or take advantage of it. The policy of containment was not invented yesterday. Remember, it was George Kennan, the pro-Nazi group in the State Department, that launched it back in 1947 and 1948. I'm adding that. Policy of containment, not new, carried out against Russia for many years, for decades, perhaps centuries. In short, whenever someone thinks that Russia has become too strong or too independent, these tools are quickly put into use. However, says Putin, talking to Russia from a position of force is an exercise in futility, and that applies even when Russia was crippled by domestic hardships, as in the 90s and early 2000s. And now we get to the part about Chechnya, which indicates the gravity of the current strategic crisis. And we'll get to that in our next segment here on World Crisis Radio for the 5th of December, St. Nicholas Day on Saturday. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. We're taping on the afternoon of Friday, December 5th. But the program will be broadcast on Saturday, December 6th, and that's St. Nicholas from what is now Turkey. So we're always getting back to the Middle East. In the case of Putin's State of the Nation address, it's very clear how a Russian leader, especially Putin, would see this attack in Grozny. And here is what he says. We remember well how and who almost openly supported separatism back then, and even outright terrorism in Russia, referred to murderers whose hands were stained with blood as nothing but rebels, and organized high-level receptions for them. Now, if you don't know what that was, get your copy of 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA and read the part about the Beslan School and the Russian press reaction to the Beslan School, which was simply that this was a massacre manufactured on the banks of the Thames and the Potomac. And that one of the key people who always comes up in this is Ilyas Akhmadov, paid by the State Department, sitting here in Washington, D.C., ambassador of a terrorist organization, according to many findings. And you'll see there was a whole debate on Johnson's Russia list and all these places you can find them. So Putin says, these rebels, in quotes, have shown up in Chechnya again. I'm sure the local guys, the local law enforcement authorities, will take proper care of them. They are now working to eliminate another terrorist raid. Let's support them. Then he gets back to this question of the receptions. Let me reiterate, we remember high-level receptions for terrorists dubbed as fighters for freedom and democracy. This is Zbigniew Brzezinski, I'm sorry. Back then, we realized that the more ground we give and the more excuses we make, the more our opponents become brazen and the more cynical and aggressive their behavior becomes. Despite our openness, unprecedented openness back then, we tried to treat people as close friends and even allies. What we got was support for separatism in Russia from across the pond, U.S., including information, political and financial support provided by the special services, CIA, Spetsslužb means CIA, CRU, get the idea? Was absolutely obvious, left no doubt that they would gladly let Russia follow the Yugoslav scenario of disintegration and dismemberment. We all remember the tragic, with all the tragic fallout for the people of Russia. It didn't work. We didn't allow that to happen. Just as it did not work for Hitler with his people-hating ideas, who set out to destroy Russia and push us back beyond the Urals. Everyone should remember how it ended. Yes. Next year, we will mark the 70th anniversary of victory in the Great Patriotic War, the Second World War. Our army crushed the enemy and liberated Europe. However, we should not forget about the bitter defeats of 1941 and 42 so as not to repeat those mistakes in the future. And then, from here, he goes right on to the next issue, the ABM Treaty. The U.S. unilaterally denounced the ABM Treaty in 2002. This had been absolutely a cornerstone of international security, strategic balance of forces and stability. The U.S. has been working relentlessly to create a global missile defense system, including in Europe. This is a threat not only to Russia, but to the world as a whole, precisely due to the possible disruption of the strategic balance of forces. And it is bad for the U.S. as well. There's more, much more in Putin's speech. I hope to get back to it. What you see here is a document of economic dirigism, state intervention, organizing, for example, a national technology initiative that will essentially reinvest 25% of the gross domestic product of Russia in modern technology. And what do we have here? We have lunatic Republicans who are blinded by their racism and their xenophobia. And Obama's answer to this is more free trade. The giant sucking sound is back. All those jobs leaving. That's the answer to being number two. And of course, we want to know from all the loudmouth chauvinists. What happened to your exceptionalism, huh? Exceptionalism can be there, but you gotta earn it. You gotta fight for it. And you guys are not fighting for it. You're fighting for your own filthy greed. A couple of other things now. Let's just put this, this attack in a bit of context, concerning the New York Times actually recommends that you read something called the Caucasian Knot, K-N-O-T, the Caucasian Knot, an authoritative website that talks about these events. It's the, this is now the third big attack this year, and up to now 290 people have been killed and 144 wounded in terrorist attacks in Chechnya through the end of November. And of course the guy that, that Putin relies on here is Kadyrov. So Kadyrov was in St. George's Hall in the Kremlin for the Putin address, and he was looking at his cell phone. What does he have? A BlackBerry or whatever he has. And, well, keeping up with the events. The other big thing, of course, and this I think is actually the headline. Is this ISIS? Yes, it's probably ISIS. It's in the sense that it's probably people who are going to be calling themselves ISIS. And, that's the word, for example, the Carnegie Moscow Center, Dmitry Trenin, says on Twitter, the night attack in Grozny looks senseless except as an attempt to embarrass Putin hours before his annual address to parliament. And Trenin and others speculate that this may have been the debut of the Islamic State known as ISIS. Well, why do we believe that? We've reported here the many threats coming from ISIS saying we're going to go on and attack Russia through Chechnya, clearly. You can go on the internet and find pictures of, ISIS crazies sitting in Syrian Air Force planes of Russian manufacture and boasting that they're going to go and bomb, Moscow, right? Now these are, so far, people who don't know how to fly them. And remember that Russia is directly involved in the sense that back in July, when it looked like Iraq might be rolled over, the Iraqi government needed some planes right away. The U.S. was way too slow. Russia delivered some used Sukhoi fighter bombers in there, and they have gone on to make quite a difference. We'll have just a little bit more about this. ISIS attacks Russia in Chechnya, and that fulfills the design of the CIA geostrategic. Hey, welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Topley from Washington, D.C. Please remember that the announced course, Political Economy of the American System, it will now most likely occur in the Washington, D.C. area around the middle of January. Please stay tuned. We'll announce that at Topley.net. We'll announce that on Webster G. Topley Twitter feed, and of course here on the weekly broadcast. ISIS attacks Russia. This we have talked about, in previous weeks. It's coming up now because of this attack. It still hasn't been claimed, but I think that's just a question of time. Anyway, if you're in the Kremlin, you got to assume it's the same as ISIS, whether it's actually Al-Qaeda or Nusra. It's all the CIA. CIA Arab Legion, CIA Islamic Legion attacking Russia under the name of ISIS. And this has got to be stopped. So here we have the Caucasus Emirate, right? Don't look now, but there's also an emir in the Caucasus, right? He's only an emir. He's not a caliph, but he's an emir. The new leader of the Caucasus Emirate is Ali Ashab Kebekov. He's not yet under the Islamic State, but he has sent lots of fighters from Chechnya and Dagestan east. They've gone to Syria to fight against the Syrian army and also then to Iraq. And here we have a guy called Omar the Chechen. This is the nom de guerre of Tarkhan Batirashvili, senior Islamic State commander in the Caucasus. And he says, he's told his father that Russia will be the next target after Iraq. We reported that a couple of months ago. So this top ISIS crazy commander of Chechen background says, "Don't worry, Dad, I'll come home and show the Russians." Mr. Batirashvili's father told Bloomberg News from his home in the Pankisi Gorge region of Georgia on the Chechen border, "I have many thousands following me now, and I'll get more. We'll have our revenge against Russia." And we also have this this film on YouTube that I referred to, the ISIS characters sitting in these Russian planes saying, "Putin, these are the Russian planes you sent to help Bashar. We will take them back to your own turf and liberate Chechnya and the Caucasus. The Islamic State is here to stay. Your throne is being threatened by us." Okay. So there it is. Now look, if you're a Russian, here's what you see. You see that you're just about encircled in some ways. You got economic sanctions that are grinding down your economy. You have got speculative attacks on the ruble being organized, and I'm sure they're using credit default swaps. The ruble is now floating. However, it's what used to call the dirty float. So the Bank of Russia is intervening to try to do bear raids to punish people that are speculating against the ruble. So you got sanctions. You got the ruble under attack. You've got a slowing economy. You've got a military problem in the sense that NATO is now sending these teams all the way in to the Baltics, to Bulgaria, Romania, these places. The South Stream pipeline is now apparently dead for the moment. And this was pressure on Bulgaria. We have a guy called Boris Borisov, the prime minister of Bulgaria. And the prime minister of Bulgaria says that the EU told him, in effect, the EU told him to sabotage the South Stream pipeline. Remember, this was going to go from Russia to Turkey, then across to Bulgaria, or actually was going to go across the Black Sea. And then from Bulgaria, it was going to get all the way over to Italy, and it would have been yet another, would have been the pendant to the Nord Stream down in the Baltic. So you would have had that, but no, not anymore. So when you saw Putin go to Turkey this week, this was simply a fallback option. In other words, the South Stream had been blocked, and therefore, the alternative was to build something to Turkey and develop the market that way. Now, of course, that could be reintegrated into something later on. But for the moment, South Stream is bad, just concerning Bulgaria. I remember living in Italy in the 70s and 80s, the Italians would always make fun of the Bulgarians. They'd say, you Bulgarians are the most obedient, you're the most servile of the Warsaw Pact. But sometimes then when the Italians felt that they were being too servile, they would say, "Siamo i Bulgari della NATO, are we the Bulgarians of NATO?" In this case, the Bulgarians of NATO are now the Bulgarians. The Bulgarians have gotten it. So, and of course, the Bulgarians are the Bulgarians of the EU also. So, sad story, right? Time to get rid of whatever government did that. I would not be fooled concerning Erdogan. He remains the bad guy, bad actor. When Erdogan says the West should butt out of the Middle East because their advice is wrong and can't help us, what he means is, don't you dare tell me I can't help ISIS. I'll help ISIS all I want because I know the Middle East and you don't. But this is all bad. The other one is Fradkov, right? The head of the, essentially of the KGB, right, of the FSB. Fradkov says that the fall of the oil price and the ruble is the subject of essentially a conspiracy and restraint of trade. Foreign investment funds, hedge funds, are taking part in ruble speculation, a la BES, right, down, short, bear any speculation has specific schemes, and schemes have a number of participants. In Putin's speech, Putin says, hey, speculators, we know who you are, and I've told the central bank to punish you, right? And you can use central bank resources to really burn these speculators. So I hope that happens, and let them be maimed in that regard and then stop doing it. So that's Frodkov, SVR, and that's deliberately introducing sanctions and attacking the ruble through manipulation of world oil prices. So ruble and oil go together, according to Mikhail Frodkov. Okay. The U.S. House of Representatives, in its absolute insanity, celebrated the day when they were passed by China by a whining resolution against Russia, a cahier de doléances, about, oh, it's so terrible what you've done in Ukraine. Well, one interesting thing, the German foreign minister has attracted some attention. This is Steinmeier, Frank-Walter Steinmeier of the German foreign ministry, the foreign minister, has given a speech where he says he essentially warns against this rhetorical escalation. He says, in our use of language in public, we should not eliminate our chances of contributing to the easing of tensions and to the mitigation of conflict. Now, this is an attack on Merkel. And a lot of people have said, oh, Merkel, she's so wonderful. She knows how to speak Russian. She keeps talking to Putin. I'm sorry. Mrs. Merkel is notable for her stupidity, her abject stupidity. Nothing good. We'll have to get back to this as soon as we can. We'll be back. Steinmeier. It turns out we have some time right now, thank goodness. Steinmeier. And I would recommend, I heard about this on the John Batchelor program. John Batchelor, a real neocon, but for some reason, this neocon on Russia, it's different because he gets Stephen Cohen on there, and Stephen Cohen tells you things. Now, Stephen Cohen has some egg on his face because he was telling you how reasonable Merkel was and how the bad U.S. was always leaning on Merkel. Fine. But unfortunately, Merkel is also bankrupt. Her hallmark is stupidity. Die dumme Kuh. Okay? Dumb cow Merkel. That's the nicest thing we can say about her. She went to Brisbane for the G20. And she gave a speech at the Lowy Institute for International Policy in Sydney, where she says, essentially, I'm losing patience with you, Putin. Quote, outdated thinking in terms of spheres of influence, which tramples international law underfoot, must not be allowed to prevail. Russia is violating the territorial integrity and the sovereignty of Ukraine. And then she goes on, we're not just talking about Ukraine, we're talking about Moldavia, about Georgia, and if things go on, we'll be talking about Serbia and the Western Balkans. So the idea, and here we're quoting from Der Spiegel, a German news magazine, that Steinmeier is putting a shot across the bows of Merkel, saying, look, your subservience, your servility to the State Department, to Kerry and so forth, this has gone too far now, and there are real vital German economic interests that are in play. Now, naturally, Steinmeier says, oh, no, we didn't do that. But Matthias Platzek, Herr Platzek, P-L-A-T-Z-E-C-K, comes from the USOs, okay, youth organization of the SPD, and the German-Russian Forum. He says, the Russian annexation of the Crimean Peninsula can be settled, quote, retroactively according to international law, and the West should make concessions to Putin. Do you share this viewpoint? And he essentially wriggles out of it. In other words, you can legalize it ex post facto. Why not? You can say, you know, this was unjust to rip it out of Russia, 23, 24 years ago. So maybe something moving in Europe, but of course remember that we got Mad Dog Cameron looking for an election, and he's gonna wanna twist the tail of the Russian bear. The London Economist, of course, they can't get over this Russian bear motif. So all of that happening, and to me this looks, well, let's go back to our list. If you're in Moscow, you're besieged, right? You're being hit with sanctions, cutting off trade. You're being hit with a tax on the oil price and the ruble. Now, obviously, with the oil price, some of that is real. Some of that is a real world economic depression and slowdown. But naturally, I think it is true that various people are piling on for various reasons. And it's easy to pile on if you think you're going to get money. So the Russian Central Bank would have to go some to stage these counterattacks periodically, a bear squeeze to really hit the people that are doing this. And then when they start howling in public, you know who they are. The South Stream pipeline dead for the moment, and then Putin has to fall back on Erdogan, who is a dubious character. But one of the things you see in Putin's speech is he says, "Let's not mix politics and economics." Well, you can see what he's getting at in this framework. The ABM question, right? The attempted first strike capability by the U.S. and NATO, and now the attack through Chechnya, and the fact that ISIS may soon be officially involved, whatever that means. These are simply labels that are used by the intelligence agencies. So there's also the question of the hypocrisy of the West. You can tell. Somebody attacks the U.S., they're a terrorist. Otherwise, you attack Russia, you can be a separatist, a militant, a gunman, a rebel, but not generally not a terrorist. Again, read the 9/11 synthetic terror made in USA. Extensive discussion of all of that. Let me also point out a couple of other things in Putin's speech. He says the Crimea for Russia has the same ideological and even sacral significance as the Temple Mount, the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and the Temple, right? That site in Jerusalem. For Russia, this is the same thing. We say that the Crimea, the ancient Kherson or Khersonesus and Sevastopol will have invaluable civilizational and even sacral importance for Russia, like the Temple Mount in Jerusalem for the followers of Islam and Judaism. So please remember that Grand Prince Vladimir, right, the one who of Kiev, right, transforming Russia into a Christian country, was baptized in this area before bringing Christianity to the Kiev Rus. All right, so you get the idea. This is a very important speech, and imagine a State of the Union address in Washington here in the House, and some terror event goes off killing 20 or 25 people, whatever it turns out to be. You can get the idea that this is heavy-duty provocation. In other words, there's a planning center now. There's a war room where they're planning things. And Putin fights back saying, we will not allow anybody to get military superiority. No one will ever attain military superiority over Russia. We have a modern and combat-ready army. We want to be polite, but it's a formidable army. We have the strength and we have the courage to protect our freedom. Remember, it's an unconquered country. Only the U.S., Britain, and Russia in the modern world pretty much have this characteristic. We will protect the diversity of the world. We will tell the truth to people abroad so that everyone can see the real and not distorted and false image of Russia. There are some problems on this front with RT, I must point out. We will actively promote business and humanitarian relations as well as scientific, educational, and cultural relations. We will not enter the path of self-isolation, xenophobia, suspicion, and the search for enemies because those are evidence of weakness, whereas Russia under Putin is strong and confident. And again, you talk about a national technology initiative investing one quarter of the gross domestic product in science and technology. I would also point out, demographically, he boasts that Russia is now 8 million inhabitants above the pessimistic demographic projections that had been made by the United Nations at the beginning of this decade. So the demographic development is now positive. The Russian population is growing again after the time of troubles, the smut under Yeltsin, when alcoholism and despair were essentially decimating this country. So, there it is. That is a huge strategic emergency. And, well, what are we going to have? Ashton Carter. Is Ashton Carter the right man here? I can hardly think so. We're happy that we were able to help shoot down the Michel Flournoy candidacy, right? She comes from the Center for a New American Security. That is General Petraeus's think tank, his personal think tank. And remember, we've got this situation where General Allen is now the ISIS czar inside the government, and he is undoubtedly scheming to oust others and to set the stage for the confrontation that he wants. And as for Ashton Carter, he once said to Bush the Younger in 2006, let's go bomb North Korea, the DPRK. No. Vote no on Ashton Carter. Sorry. Too risky. Back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. Once again, that class we were talking about for mid-December looks like it's going to go more in the direction of mid-January, but do stay tuned. And in the meantime, keep up with everything at tarpley.net. If you want to know about the Chechen rebels and their relations to the CIA, go to 9/11 Synthetic Terror Made in USA. And if you want to read specifically about Ilyas Akhmadov, the ambassador of that monstrosity, you can read about that in Obama the Postmodern Coup, The Making of a Manchurian Candidate. But now we're switching our attention to U.S. domestic, and in particular to the very decisive situation in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and in Michigan in general. And this is, of course, the fact that there's going to be a sentencing hearing on the 15th of December, at least that's what's scheduled, for our dear friend, the Reverend Edward Pinckney, who is the mass leader of the resistance against this kind of fascism in Michigan as a whole, and has been recognized by the United Nations as being that kind of a mass leader. So some of the friends of Reverend Pinckney, including the United Front Against Austerity and the Tax Wall Street Party, have been doing as much as possible to try to spread the word and to try to obtain a overturning of this verdict and freedom for Pinckney. So to get a report about this, no better person to ask than Daniela Walls, who is the chairwoman of the Tax Wall Street Party, who has been keeping in touch with people in the United States and around the world, and that's really a big deal, to give us a report on what's going on. Daniela, welcome.
With how the Tax Wall Street Party is mobilized, and then if we have time later, we can get into some philosophical issues that were raised on our last night's United Front Radio with Reverend Pinckney about institutionalized racism. And as Pinckney said, we need to fight the big war instead of all these small battles that are going to continuously pop up. And he said the right way to strategically fight a war and the most bang for your buck is that we're going to need systemic reform to the economy. But let's start with the nuts and bolts, if we can, of what our party is actually doing. So the Tax Wall Street Party is mobilized in half the states and about 10 countries now and growing. Yesterday, our D.C. local put Pinckney flyers into the hands of the economist Dean Baker and former Representative Dennis Kucinich. And Kucinich is very interested in the case. We are in communication through our D.C. local with Congressman John Conyers' office, and we had meetings with his staffers already. We are in contact with the office of Congresswoman Marcy Kaptur, trying to help paint me first, but also to bring into the larger focus of the emergency, this into the larger focus of the emergency manager laws. Last night, the D.C. local went to a party with Bernie Sanders and had a talk with him where Bernie Sanders did not know what the emergency manager's laws were, which was shocking, but speaks shocking. Volumes about the state of our so-called progressive politics in America. What you were going to say?
You're right. Shocking. Please go ahead.
Shocking. To bring home what this emergency management means, because you might not hear about it from Bernie Sanders, it seems. If you have any public parks, public schools, public beaches, public art museums, public anything, all of that is going to get privatized, and it's going to get sold for pennies on the dollars and inside deals and crony capitalism. So what's happening in Benton Harbor and Detroit is a template. All of your art museums, like I said, parks, beaches, state parks, are going to be sold in these insider deals and land grabs. Land grabs is a key term, and that's what's happening in Benton Harbor with the beach. Also, your firehouses and libraries could be made into upscale condominiums, like we've seen and talked about several times on the show. And that's the future that awaits all of us. So our local is working on organizing and sending out as many letters to Judge Schrock as they can. I want to ask each of your audience members to send one or more of these letters as well. But at least make sure if you're in the audience, you send one. You'll find a sample letter at an instructional website we set up. That's freepinkney, freepinkney.wordpress.com. You will need to print two copies of your letter and send one to Judge Schrock and one to Pinkney. This is important to send one to Pinkney so he has a record of these correspondences and in case the judge just chucks them. The address of both Pinkney and the judge are at freepinkney.wordpress.com. We have locals now, like you said, in many countries in personal contact with their foreign embassies and OSCE offices. This is in India now, Moscow, Spain, Denmark, Ireland, England, Thailand, Australia, France, and Germany. They're in action. We have locals writing articles, including Brandon Turbeville in South Carolina, has written a few about the emergency manager laws for activist posts. If you go to activistpost.com, you can find them. We need as many articles as possible covering Pinkney. So if you're a writer or even have a blog, write one, and then contact all of your local media. On freepinkney.wordpress.com, we have a post called Talking Points for Journalists. Use that to arm yourself with facts, and that will help a journalist have something to sink their teeth into, what we wrote there. People should also be contacting big magazines like Time Magazine, Newsweek, The New York Times, Democracy Now!, Counterpunch, Matt Taibbi at Rolling Stone. Civil rights abuses are the hot issue right now, so we need to strike while the iron is hot. If you can think of any more, Webster, do you think of any more big magazines that might be friendly to this that I missed?
You got to think about the Atlantic Monthly, Harper's, a little bit higher brow, right? The Nation, to be sure. The Nation.
The Nation.
Of Katrina VandenHeuvel.
And then letters from lawyers and judges are gold right now. Letters from everybody are gold, but letters from lawyers and judges are gold right now. So if you are a judge or you are a lawyer, please contact me immediately at taxwallstreetparty@gmail.com. We've already gotten letters from lawyers of goodwill that I'm working with drafting. Going over the legal briefs and drafting a proper letter with the facts of the case and also some memos and motions. So we are looking in general for polite, professional letters that restate the facts of the case and implore the judge to overturn the verdict for insufficient evidence. And that's what's important. So that don't be afraid in a letter to a judge to write your profession, your address, where you're from. There's not going to be any blowback from that. Make that professional and restate the facts of the case. So, with the help of Reverend Pinkney, that's as much of the action I could cover for right now, but with the help of Reverend Pinkney, we're leading and moving economic demands, into the Ferguson debate. So we did an hour last night with Pinkney on racism and economics on United Front Radio, just like how you did Yeoman's Service, Webster, during Occupy, steering part of that toward a program. With the Ferguson issue, we must both allow for an open conversation about institutionalized racism and push the conversation into the realm of economics. There was a very interesting piece in Time magazine this week by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar in which he said the coming race war won't be just about race, and we feel that's critically important to steer activism away from, you know, unfocused racial strife into the arena that into some common arena that has common ground, which is economic reform. But we can't deny that there is institutionalized racism. As Pinckney said last night, if we have economic equality, racism will still be there, but it won't be as great. He also said waiting for months and months on all of these verdicts to come in takes time away from building and building on our foundation, which is a platform for recovery. When I've been listening this week to black political radio shows and white political radio shows, it seems that, again, it's a little reminiscent of Occupy, where nobody has a battle plan. There's a lot of anger, a lot of chaos, a lot of confusion, but no program. People are using words on some shows like we need to go to battle. But then there's no vision for what it will look like after they win, and that's always been the tenuous part of any revolution. So people are saying things like, you know, kill the rich, and they focus on boycotting one specific company. You know, those kind of terms are being thrown around now. So there's no discussion, like there's, and also it's focusing on small things like one company, but there's no discussion of a broad-based reform. Like in the case of Benton Harbor, the obvious issue is a protective tariff. Like what happened to the Benton Harbor jobs? They went to Mexico, they went to China. Why? And free trade means removing the financial penalty for a company like Whirlpool to import goods from overseas. So contact me. I hear the music, Webster, at
Tax Wall Street Party at gmail.com.
Especially if you're a lawyer or a judge. I need you to come to me now. Thank you, Webster. Thank you so much for
having me. I'll touch next week. And we've been intervening on that in lots of meetings, and it's been getting a very good hearing. We'll be back in a minute. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. Webster Tarpley here in Washington, D.C. for our St. Nicholas Day show. Now, it's in perspective, right? We've had Ferguson with Michael Brown. We have this monstrous homicide murder of Eric Garner on Staten Island. Remember, Staten Island is an island of reactionaries. New York has a middle class. It has some ultra-lefts. But if you're a reactionary, you go to Staten Island, and I'm afraid that's what we're seeing, among other things. Bad news. So there is a problem which cannot be solved by economic means alone. It will require a direct ideological campaign, and it will require getting some of these district attorneys out and replacing them with people who have a better sense of what we need for governance. In other words, the logic about indicting Darren Wilson was indict him for a charge, manslaughter, involuntary manslaughter, for the sake of public order, to keep order in the streets. That's a consideration. Statesmen would have to look at that. And in the case of Eric Garner, it's open and shut case. Indict that guy for something more serious, murder one, murder two, whatever it is, because that's what you see, and otherwise you're going to get all kinds of disorder. But the main thing here we have to consider is under these conditions of economic breakdown, these protests on the Ferguson and Staten Island and the case of this 12-year-old boy simply murdered for having a toy gun, these can detonate the mass strike. The mass strike can go off at any time, and we've got to be ready for it. So it means economic demands, the 5 to 10 million new jobs for young people, perhaps temporary, quite a few of them on the WPA federal budget. Yes, fine. And also then the tariff, as Daniela was saying. Here in Washington, D.C., I have to say we're having the final farewell to the former mayor, Marion Barry, and I would like to sum up what quite a number of people remember about him, and this is actually it's quite significant that it works this way. We have lots and lots of people quoted in the Washington Post today saying that the first job they ever had, the first time they ever got a paycheck and considered themselves integrated into society, was under Mayor Barry, because he would get you a job. So here we have the casket of the late mayor and city council member, been in government for 40 to 50 years, hated by the Washington Post, hated by Katherine Graham. It's, of course, a sad day, but Petula Dvorak writes, the first in a long line of thankful Washingtonians. So these are people who remember. They say, when I was younger, I got my first job thanks to Marion Barry. Not the free market, huh? No free market. They worked as groundskeepers, department counselors, youth leadership organizers, crossing guards, and nurses. Marion Barry gave them those jobs. That's what you will hear almost any time you talk to native Washingtonians of a certain age. Marion Barry gave me my first summer job. And that was a paycheck, but it was also responsibility, trust, pride, where none had been there. So, I did newspaper delivery, but Marion Barry gave me my first real job as a groundskeeper. And the other interesting thing we find is, what was one of the last things Marion Barry did on earth? The Reverend Jim Dickerson, executive director of affordable housing called MANA, recalled hosting one of Barry's last public events, a ribbon cutting for a 24-unit apartment complex in Anacostia. That's the southeast part of the district, beyond the branch of the Potomac that goes off in that other direction. It's a ribbon cutting for a 24-unit apartment complex in Anacostia, built with city subsidies and affordable for people with incomes of $30,000 or less. He started all of these programs that we continue to build on. So all of these different things, and not all in the public sector. Here we have a woman says she was 14 years old when Barry's youth leadership program plucked her from a paper route and planted her at the Harriet Tubman Quad at Howard University one summer. And now the summing up of all. As Barry's casket is carried in, and he'll be lying in state at the district building and then the memorial service on St. Nicholas's Day, one viewer says, I said a small prayer to thank him for his life, and may his legacy be blessed. Now look at that despicable U.S. ruling class. How many of them could qualify for something like that, right? For this gratitude, which is actually overwhelming in the black community, but not only here in Washington, D.C. And if you were a hedge fund hyena, if you were a zombie banker, if you were a locust fund attacking Argentina, hang your head in shame. This is the kind of political leadership we need. And of course, the Department of Justice set up a Get Barry test. They successfully entrapped him. He had weaknesses for women and for narcotics. Terrible, but a lot of people then said, this is somebody who looks sort of like me. It's obviously better not to do that stuff. But then when he got out of jail, he was reelected the mayor, things that are often forgotten. So I also want to just mention again that when they there was a program on one of the local television stations affiliated with one of the three main broadcast networks, I was a guy... I was probably the only white guy standing up for Marion Barry, and I'm very glad I did. And I talked about Gestapo tactics here in Washington, D.C., and obviously the fact it was a coup d'etat by the FBI, by the Department of Justice, when they successfully entrapped him. So I think that's a very interesting commentary. We need somebody... and a movement that will put that stuff on the agenda, right? No jobs, no peace. No jobs, no peace. That's the heart of the matter. Obviously, in the short run, these individual cases are tragic, and many people can relate to them. But then the task of leadership, right? The thing we're seeing right now is there's a vacuum of leadership. Some forces have got to get in there and say, we want those jobs. Paid for by Wall Street, not paid for by borrowing from China, not paid for by taxing anybody. Wall Street must pay. And that's how we'll solve these questions as the United States goes forward. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. the question now of Syria and Turkey once again from a slightly different point of view. In the past week, we have had Iran bombing the ISIS terrorists, and I think civilization, humanity, owes a vote of thanks to Iran. Iran says, you terrorists, don't get within 25 miles of our border, or we'll blow you to kingdom come. And that's undoubtedly a plus. I think this ought to lead to some people rethinking their sort of Pavlovian anti-militarist reactions. I'm afraid sometimes you do have to do this stuff. Hitler was one. This seems to be another one. So Iran has bombed ISIS in Iraq. And Syria, the Syrian Arab Army Air Force, is bombing ISIS in the region of Kobane. So essentially, whether you like it or not, it's a united front of the United States with Iran and with Syria against ISIS. That is reality. And whether the humanitarian bombers, the Susan Rice people, or the Samantha Power people, if they don't like that, that's too bad for them. Assad has also said that the U.S. attacks are not effective, right? So he's needling the U.S. Why don't you do more? Indeed, why don't you do more? 1,000 airstrikes over a period of 4 to 6 or 8 weeks? That's totally inadequate. And the other big thing now, the hand that held the dagger has plunged it into the back of its neighbor. And that's Erdogan once again. Last weekend in the neighborhood of Kobane, we have very well documented, photographed, filmed event in which the Turkish army, under the orders of Erdogan and Davutoglu, allows ISIS killers to come onto Turkish territory to start attacking the Kurds in Kobane. And this is another outrage, and this Erdogan has gone too far. He will have to be called to account. This cannot coexist with NATO or anything else. And his spouting this stuff about how the West doesn't understand the Middle East, but apparently he does. No, I'm sorry. You don't, because you're supporting ISIS. The Kurds, of course, called attention to this. You found it on the Twitter feed of Tarpley, Webster G. Tarpley. The problem was, as the Kurds said, previously they'd been surrounded on three sides, right? East, west, and south. But now, thanks to Erdogan, they can also be surrounded on the north with terrorist ISIS crazies, killers, butchers, operating from Turkish territory. So this cannot be allowed. Now, the Turkish government denies it. That's ridiculous. There's also a question about is it possible to negotiate for terrorists, with terrorists, to try to get their kidnapped victims out. But the first problem, as we've pointed out with all these cases, is the people that are in the control of ISIS got there on their own, right? Who in God's name told you to go there and minister to the needs of the Free Syrian Army, the Nusra Brigade, Al-Qaeda, or ISIS? People who get themselves into these predicaments, I think it would be time for the State Department to escalate its warning, don't go there, dear Americans. However, once they're in custody, I would just cite the advice of Cardinal Richelieu, one of my all-time favorites. Cardinal Richelieu has a very interesting paragraph, and it's very meaty and to the point. And he says, I always recommend negotiating with everybody all the time. He says, I negotiate with them, whether there's hope for a settlement or no hope, that doesn't matter to me. I always learn more, I'm always stronger and better if I keep negotiating with those people. So I would negotiate with anybody. I would not be afraid, right? Let us never negotiate out of fear, but let us never fear to negotiate. That would be the summary on that one. And we also have Mubarak. Mubarak not guilty. Thermidor, according to some, has now arrived for this idiotic farce of the Arab Spring. There never was a revolution, people. I put out the criteria at the time. Revolution means abolish slavery, break a foreign protectorate, as Nasser did in the 50s, overthrow a monarchy, tremendous, you know, deep economic reforms like the New Deal. And again, abolish slavery certainly counts. There never was a Tahrir revolution. That was a petty bourgeois pipe dream of petty bourgeois showboaters and ego trippers. It never happened. And Mubarak, it's not clear to me how you're going to put Mubarak in the pillory. The point is that under Mubarak there was some recognizable form of civilization, right? You can call it a dictatorship, sure. A military dictatorship. But is that the worst? Look over in Libya and you'll see something that's much, much worse. So Mubarak is obviously at the end of his career. But when it comes to General Sisi, I would say to people, especially the ultra-lefts, mushheads, left liberals and others, open your eyes to the fact that Sisi has been the salvation of Egypt, which is why U.S. Ambassador Patterson, who's now been promoted to Assistant Secretary of State for the Middle East, and others have tried to destabilize Egypt with the help of the Muslim Brotherhood. There's a worldwide alliance between the Muslim Brotherhood and the Central Intelligence Agency, and that is to destroy civilization. ISIS, of course, the negation of civilization. Today on National Public Radio, they were talking about, they're so sophisticated. This woman, Labat, the CNN editor, always says how sophisticated those ISIS guys are. What were those websites? We do have to ask. National Security Agency, with all your nefarious abilities to shut down websites, how come you allow ISIS websites to get up there so that the poor, duped, alienated young characters in Europe and elsewhere can be brainwashed by ISIS? And then there were three or four callers today on National Public Radio attacking Islam, and I think this is very, very misleading. Remember, when Turkey was freed from the Sultan, they put Atatürk into power. Atatürk, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, was a modernizing, secular, military man interested in national progress, right? And he had the, not Sharia law, but the Code Napoleon for the criminal side and the Swiss civil code for the civil side. And he was followed then by people like President Nasser of Egypt, Colonel Gaddafi of Libya, the Assad dynasty, if you want, in Syria, fine. General Qassem in Iraq, an unsung figure, I think, of great merit. Arafat among the Palestinians. Bourguiba for the Tunisians. Many interesting insights. And people like Ben Bella and Boumediene on the Algerian side. You notice there are no religious fanatics among that group. When the Arabs could choose, they tended to choose secular, modernizing, military, populists with an economic program, bread subsidies, fuel subsidies, cooking oil subsidies, things like this. That's the heart of the matter of the Arab world. Nasserism was and I think will be for the foreseeable future. Nasserism is represented by Sisi, represented to some extent by Bashar. That is the road of Middle Eastern progress, at least among the Arabs and perhaps beyond. Back in a minute on World Crisis Radio. Welcome back to World Crisis Radio. This is now our final segment of the edition taped on the 5th of December 2014 and broadcast for you on St. Nicholas Day, the 6th of December. So we want to go, without further ado, to Benton Harbor, Michigan, and get the latest from Reverend Edward Pinckney. And we want to point out that among all of the events that have taken place in the last couple of weeks, remember that what Reverend Pinckney is doing is in many ways one of the most critical of all of these, because he is pioneering methods of mass resistance against the new types of fascism that are being imposed by Wall Street and its allies? In other words, how does the community of Benton Harbor defend itself against the predatory rule of a company town with Whirlpool, meaning Wall Street, picking all of the important municipal and local officials? So, Reverend Pinckney, how are you this week?
Well, sir, I am great. I am excited. And I want to tell you, we had one of the best weeks that we have had in the last 2-3 years. Let me get into it. One of the commissioners who actually went after me was arrested Thursday morning for embezzlement of over $1 million.
Huh?
And we were totally responsible for that. It's not just him. Did you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
And number two, you know the sheriff, Paul Bailey.
Bailey, right.
Judge DeWayne, the one who put the election back on the map, called Sheriff Bailey in and charged him with contempt of court. And he is, right now, he's sweating. He's deciding right now, well, he's going to send him to jail for 90 days. This has been such a week that nobody will believe this. Also, I do have some hot news I want to give you, but I can only give you a little bit of it because next week I'm going to pop it right on your show.
Okay.
But I will tell you this. It is a juror who had a personal relationship with the sheriff's department. And we got the goods, but I can't tell you anything else. Because if they listen to your show, they'll know exactly where we're going with this.
Okay, so Reverend, you know best. Let me just go back now. When you say a commissioner, what exactly is a commissioner in Benton Harbor these days?
He's a county commissioner. He's over the county. And what he had done, he had embezzled almost $1 million. And, well, they all embezzled money. They all get this grant money under somebody else's name, and they become over the money. And then they normally never get caught. But we have put in a program to check them out and find out exactly where's the money is. See, once you follow the money, you can almost trace who's getting what.
And absolutely. Can you give us the guy's name? Some people might want to look this up.
His name is Bob Woolley. W-O-O-L-E-Y. Bob Woolley. W-O-O-L-E-Y. And he's in such a position right now at the county board commissioner meeting. They was talking about pray for him. They never mentioned praying for me. So now they want everybody in the community to pray for Bob. But I tell you one thing. Listen to this. We're doing some See, most of the time when you're under the gun, like I am, they got to get trying to put the rope around my neck, but we're still fighting. Like I told them, this fight is never over. It's never over until I'm dead and gone. And then it's going to continue because somebody else is going to take up the torch. So we're doing some of the work that I'm hoping that people around the country understand how important this work is. Because if they don't, you know, it's coming to your town next. If we don't stop them now, you are going to be the very next person to get this treatment. And I'll tell you this, we can win this battle if we learn to work together and fight together. We can do it because I'm not
Reverend,
going
Reverend, I'm absolutely, I believe you and I can see it. I've got the WSB TV here on the internet. Berrien County Commissioner charged for embezzling, they say more than $150,000. I'm sure it's more.
Absolutely.
And there he is, W-O-O-L-E-Y, Bob Woolley?
Yes.
Woolley? Woolley.
Woolley, we call him Bob Woolley. and tell you right now, he has been doing this for 7 years, so it's close to $1 million. And they're trying, instead of charging him for every time he did it, they gave him just one charge because he's friends with the prosecutor. See, he didn't expect us to come up with this information, you see. But But we got one other guy we're going to get next. The guy we're going to get next is...
Don't let the cat out of the bag too soon. Let's make sure we have them, you know, already exposed.
That's right.
And the, remember, it's Sheriff Bailey. And that what it looks like here is that the participants in that meeting where they were all boasting about how they got Pinckney, that turns out to be nemesis, right? That turned out to be a bad place to be.
Absolutely. And it was, look, I said, don't mess with Pinckney. That's the message I'm sending them.
Now, Reverend, based on that, based on this news, tell people again how they can join what is now a fight back with a better than average chance of succeeding.
Absolutely. You can look me up on bhbanco.org. That's bhbanco.org. That's bhbanco.org. Or you can mail a check to Banco, BANCO, 1940 Union Avenue, Benton Harbor, Michigan, 49022. Or you can call me at 269-925-0001. That's 269-925-0001. You can reach me. Call me. I would love to have you in this fight with me because we're going to win this fight.
Absolutely. And never say die, because look at all these wonderful things that can pop out. And it's all over the local press. I'm just admiring all of these. The story apparently broke yesterday. Am I right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. They arrested him, and they didn't send the SWAT team, even though it's really close to $1 million because he's been doing it for 7 years, getting his grant money. And by him being a Caucasian, as a matter of fact, they gave him a chance to surrender rather than send the SWAT team to his house like they sent the SWAT team to my home. It's amazing. And also, another big story is going to be Sheriff Bailey. That's going to be a big story because, for one thing, there is a strong possibility that this sheriff will be going to jail because Duane is not happy, Judge Duane. He's the one who actually put the election back on the ballot, and they took it away and took it up to the appeal court, and they were the one who reversed this thing. So now we're in a whole different world, but we're fighting back.
And this guy, Woolley, Berrien County Commissioner, I take it that he's linked to this Upton political machine?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Matter of fact, he was one of the guys that was at the meeting and gave Sheriff Bailey a standing ovation.
Right.
Yes, he was definitely there. And there's two other ones who was there, but we won't mention it like you said. But their day is coming also. It's just a matter of time before all of them go down.
Okay, Reverend. That's wonderful news. And congratulations to you and congratulations to the people there who have been working with you to make that possible. And we'll try to spread that around the world as best we can. So more power to you, Reverend. And next week is going to be even bigger news, right?
That's right. Next week I've got big, big, big news.
And we're honored to have you here. So thank you again, Reverend Pinckney, and we'll see you all next week on World Crisis Radio.